A Better World with Mitch Rabin, Mondays and Wednesdays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back to A Better World. This is your host, Mitchell J. Rabin, and I'm very glad you're joining us again today on Progressive Radio Network. And we'll be really having a very interesting show. I have invited back a guest that I had probably about 2 years ago at this point, give or take, who is a colleague of mine and a dear friend, David Katzmeier, who really has developed an extraordinary system called Collarhythms. So a little bit about David. He is a scholar, a researcher, and a website designer, actually. He's helped out with A Better World a number of times over the years and continues to. And he'll be discussing with me today on the show a real breakthrough in understanding time cycles. He's developed his own system, as I mentioned, called Collarhythms. He's been on both A Better World Radio, as I mentioned, and A Better World TV over the years, and presenting a fascinating body of material about the effect of macro and micro cycles on human behavior in economics, politics, social life, our physical and our emotional lives, as well as what's going on geologically with the world at large. So while a fair amount of his focus is on redating the United States of America's birth date, out of which came a lot of his developments, the work of Collarhythms really goes worldwide. It's not limited to one country. It is international. It's a vast volume of material. And by understanding our bodies and our emotions, time cycles, per David Katzmeier's work, we can be much more sensitive to the flow of energy and being in the flow, as we say, or being against that stream, and we all know what that costs. Yes, it can be done, but it's not the optimum, you could say, potential and possibility. So, Dave, are you there?
I am here.
I'm very glad to have you on the show today, David.
Thank you.
Absolutely. As I was saying, your work is so interesting, and it has so much relevance to the different aspects of our lives, and we'll get into that as we develop the show. Could you first define what is Collarhythms?
Well, Collarhythms are basically the cycles that we can find in a nation as it moves with a group consciousness, or as it moves in the world, the slower-moving trends of civilization. Kala itself is Sanskrit for time. So Collarhythms are the cycles of time moving in a group, a body of people.
Okay, and so how did you kind of discern this? I mean, there are, of course, so many cycles that we as humans deal with, the clocks of the body, biorhythms, for women, menstrual cycles. All hormones follow their own, you know, sort of ebb and flow. We live according to cycles, of course, night and day, lunar, solar. What is it that distinguishes what you've developed, David, from our other larger understandings and general understandings of cycles?
To see how they move in a group consciousness and then be able to determine the durations of time by which they will repeat. You mentioned biorhythms. In way you can say that cholera rhythms of a nation are indeed the biorhythms of a nation.
Mm-hmm.
And you asked me, how did this begin? It began with my fascination with an age-old concept that the pattern of everything is in anything. So the patterns within us are going to be found in the civilizations that we create, only they take place over larger periods of time. And so we have our internal rhythms of biorhythms, which are cycles moving, a physical cycle, an emotional cycle, and an intellectual cycle, moving within us as an internal clockwork from the day we're born. So do the nations that we create have internal rhythms of highs and lows, good days and bad days, that show up in our economy and how well we build and how well we do with our schools, all part of an internal clockwork that begins ticking from the moment a country is born.
Interesting.
So it's a fractal relationship.
It's fractal, just what I was going to say, exactly. It's sort of like, as they say, the way we do one thing is the way we do everything.
Indeed.
You know, we're either extremely conscientious and persistent and kind of reliable, or we're whatever way they be. And you find that it's interesting that your concept of cholerhythms is specifically anchored in group consciousness, where I believe other understandings of different cycles are perhaps, would you say, more objective. It has to do more with kind of the way bodies in space move.
Yes, there's a correlation between what we can see and the invisible dynamic forces that manifest in our internal clockworks and the patterns that we see in the physical manifestations of the physical sciences. So,
yeah.
And in fact, there's correlations between things. You mentioned lunar and solar. Well, there are many ways that on different levels, how the lunar month relates to the menstrual cycle of women and to the 28-day emotional cycle born in us via biorhythms for both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Then on another level, we fractal up into the country, and we see that there's a 36-year emotional cycle of highs and lows in the mood of a nation, again, in the Saros cycles of the moon, which has to do with the tilt of its orbital plane around Earth. There is an 18.2-year cycle. So you have half of our emotional cycle being reflected in the patterns of the moon. And there are examples in solar activity that correlate with the nation. The 11-year sunspot cycle is a quarter of the intellectual trends within a nation that lasts for 44 years. But just two examples right there to show the correlations in the things around us physically manifest are in tune with the invisible forces that we see only in our behavior. So we have to understand our behavior to get to the abstract reality, to get to the patterns and the rhythms that are moving us from within.
Interesting. So it's like there's an inherent need for knowing our own psychology in
Absolutely.
Order to
yes.
really be in touch with the ebb and flow in our own emotional life.
Yes, and we need history to do that, to understand where we are and to project forward. And we do this all the time if you're analyzing the stock market. People will, if you're doing technical analysis of the stocks and you've got your line charts and you're running your cycles programs, you're basically looking for patterns in the history of change so that you can project ahead and buy that next stock. Well, it applies to more than stocks. It applies to what is the mood of the country and what is the fashion going to be and what will our cars look like? Can we expect students to do well? Are we going to expand in government programs? Or are we going to retract in them and so forth? And all of these things are running in patterns, but they are not so clearly evident to us because there is more than one cycle moving internally in a nation because we have a body and a heart and a mind. As each of us is a person, so does a nation have a heart, a body, and a mind.
Uh-huh.
And each one has a cycle of a different duration, so they can be in a myriad of patterns at any one time. But if you determine how long each cycle is and plot it, you can see where we're going up and where we're going down. And if they all go down, you have a depression. If they all go up, you have the roaring 20s, things like that.
Interesting, interesting. So from that point of view, you could say that it is predictive or forecasting in nature. If you can determine the patterns of the past and you know the emotional, mental, and physical cycles of either a person, a group, or a nation,
yeah,
you would then have a kind of a handle on what might be happening next. Is that a fair thing to say?
It is a fair thing to say in terms that you'll know what our tendencies are, because history repeats itself, but it doesn't duplicate itself. So, a quote from Mark Twain, because what happens is the trends of influence are plottable. You know, is this going to be a bad day for us? Or if you're going to start expanding on something new, are you catching a tide as it's rising? Or, my goodness, are you doing it right at the end of the trend, and by the time you get done investing, maybe you're a movie producer, and your Westerns were really the thing, and you put together a multi-million-dollar film, and it takes you 2 years, and you produce it right at the end of the genre. You might not do so well, and I've seen it happen. So
yeah,
things like that, you know. So it's important to know where we are in terms of what our tendencies are and our influence, because that is an internal clockwork. And then to use that in with what our events are at the time in the world of physical causality.
So from that point of view, first let's deal with, like, on a local level, Dave, of how could you say how you use calorhythms in your own life, like, let's say, either on a daily basis, the way some people would use astrology, or on a weekly basis or monthly, to kind of get a glimpse of what it would be good to focus on from a probabilistic point of view, day by
yes.
day?
Yes, on a day by day. Not long ago, I was working for a bookseller here in Pennsylvania, and we were talking about, of a vast array of different genres that he had there in books. And I had a conversation with the bookstore owner, and I said, there's a time for looking forward, and there's a time for looking back. And right now, at the time we had the conversation, I was saying that antiquities and nostalgia, ephemera, not so popular. We're not in a time of looking back anymore, and we're going to have a difficult time, you know, getting any margin on things acquired in that area. However, the bookstore began making more money when it was able to make a deal where it could sell recent releases, and everybody was interested in buying the new books. Now, this bookstore made its wealth in the 80s and the 70s when people were looking back, and they had quite a supply of antique books. And by this decade, they were having trouble turning a profit until they started moving into the modern market.
Yes, interesting. So you were able to discern those rhythms in essentially the emotional and mental physical cycles of the nation?
Of the nation, exactly. There's a physical cycle that influences, you know, production and military strength and vigorous stancing that lasts 28 years to repeat. And the emotional cycle, bringing us highs like the Roaring 20s or Beatlemania or the current spiritual era, that goes in highs and lows of 36 years and an intellectual high and low of 44 years when we become very innovative and music becomes very intricate when it's high. And you have, well, what's called Generation X when it's low. And in addition to these things going between high and low, whether it's your physical or your emotional or your intellectual energies, there is also the patterns of development by how it builds up to become high and how it cuts back to be low. And it's during those patterns of the highs and lows that you have periods where you're looking forward as you're moving forward, and other times when you cut back, it's time to pull up the drawbridge, reflect, become nostalgic. And there's patterns within the highs and lows for each of the three aspects of us.
Interesting, interesting. So I'm going to just kind of apply it to myself. It's theoretical, so, you know, or I should say hypothetical. So if, like, on a given day, I'm feeling particularly mentally acute, okay? And it would be a good day, perhaps, for me to be engaged in different intellectual tasks, maybe doing a little editing on my book, writing some articles, doing the newsletter, any number of projects like that.
Yeah.
And on a physical day, where my physical cycle is up, it would be a good day for me to go out, you know, walking, biking, and playing paddle tennis.
Yes.
And intellectual pursuits better off another day.
Absolutely. In fact, okay. Physical trainers and boxers and people who, you know, do professional racing and so forth will often develop their routine in accordance with the biorhythms. And here we're doing a fractal down to a person, up to a nation, but we're seeing the same patterns and smaller rhythms of a person and larger rhythms of the nation. So if you're doing physical training, if you want to take on that extra lap because you're running or you want to play an extra set at racquetball, then do that when you're on a physical high. But when your 23-day physical cycle crosses down in the low, it's advised that you don't take on any extra activity, only maintain the extra levels that you had reached while you were high. And stay there until you're high again before you go to new ground.
I see. Very interesting. And on the emotional level, it might be one day might be really wonderful for romance. And then
absolutely.
Another day it would probably be good to be kind of reading a book.
That's absolutely true. You're more likely to be in the mood for romance during an emotional high. No question about it. That 28-day pattern is consistent like clockwork. You know, regardless if you're a woman, where your menstrual cycle is or anything, it's determined from the day that you're born, which is interesting.
It's interesting. Definitely. I want to hear more about that. And I just to say, I've been listening to the different durations of these patterns that you're mentioning, Dave. I mean, one looks like it's an 18.2 month or year cycle. I forgot. Another is 11. Another is 44.
Yeah.
How
yeah.
did you determine what these various durations are, or is that too complex a question?
It was a little bit of trial and error, because I had the intuition to realize that, yes, there are such things as biorhythms of a nation. So I thought, well, okay, let's take a look at the durations of the 23-day physical cycle, the 28-day emotional cycle, the 33-day intellectual cycle of biorhythms, and let's make some multiples of that. So I tried to take it out into years and so forth, and the math I put to it, well, that didn't work. So I started to look around at the patterns of what was already discovered. You know, when we look at patterns of change, there are 7-year patterns in industry. There are 9-year patterns in relationships having to do with the most common. It's on the 10th year that most divorces occur, if they occur. Second most common is after 3 years. And there's the supposition that certain parts of brain development end at age 22, a multiple of 11. So I had a premise here, and you can find documentation of the 7-year septennial rhythm, the 9-year pattern, the 11-year pattern, so forth, on my site at kalarhythms.com. That's kalarhythms.com. And I realized I had premises. So I looked, is there a 7-year, a 9-year, an 11-year pattern in history? And there wasn't quite right. So I said, well, if I've hit a key, let's work with multiples. I doubled that and looked for 14-year, 18-year, 22-year. Something was there, but not quite right. 3 times, not right, and then 4 times hit it dead on. What I found that I discovered the quarters of a cycle. And that's significant because each cycle has 4 quarters of development. So when I took these patterns, I was able to discover that there are biorhythms of a nation lasting 28 years long, 4 times 7, 36 years long, which is 4 times 9, and 44 years long, which is 4 times 11-year quarter. And applied that to what did I find in history? Then the correlations matched up throughout the entire United States history.
Yeah. Interesting.
That was a long answer, but it was a lengthy process because I was trying everything out.
Exactly. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, making a new dish with a new recipe, you know, and do you add, you know, 3 dashes of salt? Is it an 11-year cycle or 22 or, you know?
Or it's like tasting a salad and saying, what is in the salad? And then if you try to replicate that salad to figure out what is the recipe, you might have to try a few things out. But when you finally are able to reproduce that salad exactly, you're going to realize that there is a formula in how much lettuce and how much spinach and how much olives and how much of this is in there. And you go, my goodness, I didn't know that there was going to be such an organized pattern in this recipe, and that the pattern of this recipe is a pattern that we can find in other things in nature and in physics and many other sciences all around us.
It's interesting. I mean, in some ways, it's sort of like reverse engineering, you know. It's seeing what you've got and kind of taking a step backwards and upward to get an aerial view of those patterns, you know.
Which I was motivated to do when I realized the age-old axiom that the pattern of everything is in anything, and that the biorhythms with us may, in fact, be in the civilizations we create. And lo and behold, I found that they are.
Yes, that's a beautiful statement, actually. It's beautiful. And it's interesting. I mean, just for the sake of history, no pun intended here, we should kind of probably state two things. One is that you and I met, Dave, at the Open Center back in the early 90s, both attending a workshop of no one other than Terence McKenna.
Yes.
Who, for those of you in the audience who may know, Terence McKenna is known as a penseur extraordinaire of the 20th century. He's one of the great minds who, one of his last books was written with the British biologist Rupert Sheldrake. And not only is he the author of numerous books on his own, The Invisible Landscape, Food of the Gods, and many others, largely regarding the role of sacred plants and psychological medicine, you could say, psychosomatic medicine, found in the Amazonian plant world largely, but not only. He also developed the time wave zero theory, which was a predictive blend of the I Ching and a few other interesting elements in his recipe that predicted novelty, as you recall, Dave.
That's right. When he gave that lecture in 1993, he was using the hexagrams of the Qingwen sequence of the I Ching.
Exactly.
And he looked at the pattern by which they were laid out and the numerical difference that you would find in the sequence in any hexagram in relation to the one just before it. And that numerical difference between the two, as you progress through all 64, he called the rate of change. He plotted the rate of change on a chart, and he said, what we have here is a pattern that is going to be reflected in the changes of history, of civilizations. And he said, not only can we look at what's happened through historic events, but we can look at that on a macrosphere, but also zoom in within a small period of time and look within a short sequence of events within a particular nation, for instance, and see that pattern replicate itself on a smaller scale within that subset of events, because Terence said that this was a fractal map of time.
Yeah.
So there's cycles within cycles within cycles, which is the same premise that I believe holds true when you say that there's biorhythms within a person, georhythms within a nation, megarhythms within a world. It's the same set of cycles reappearing in larger institutions and at greater periods of time to repeat the same pattern, fractal time.
Exactly. So interesting. And for the record, before we make a little announcement of who we are and where we are and what we're doing here on the radio, I do want to say that we all did gather for lunch with Terence. And I say this because for those of you out there who know who Terence McKenna is or are Google savvy enough to go find out. He is truly one of the memorable figures of the 20th century. And we had the pleasure of having lunch with him that day. And Dave, you unwound your calorhythms theory, and we were watching his eyes bulge in interest. I won't say he salivated, but it was clear that he was very interested in your approach. And while he was very pleased with his and also sought to disprove it repeatedly, he reminded us, at the same time, I think he saw kind of a stability and logic, sound logic in your thinking that was really wonderful to see a man of his caliber appreciate the work that you had developed.
Well, thank you for that. He did express interest. In fact, I will be eternally grateful to Terence McKenna, God rest his soul, because when I went up to him, there was a brief break, and I told him what I was working on. He became interested, and he invited me to lunch. And when we that's why I was there, so that we could talk more. We sat, there was about maybe 14 of us at the table. Terence and I sat side by side. And it was because of his invitation that I met you. And so, but he was as interested in my work as I was in his, I'm pleased to say. And then probably because there was a common inspiration in the discovery of fractal time, which he manifests in his discoveries and as I seek to do in mine.
Exactly. Let's let everybody know that this is Mitchell J. Rabin on A Better World on Progressive Radio Network, and we are speaking today and taking the hour with David Katzmeier, a researcher, a scholar in the domain of time cycles. And time cycles, from the point of view of health, of understanding politics, of understanding economic cycles, is just actually very ignored and yet quintessential as an underlying influence in our daily lives. And we are just unfortunately rather unconscious about the effects of time cycles and in the way we operate. And if we were to accord with the work that you have uncovered and the internal sequencing and logic of it, we could all benefit tremendously. And the other piece I would like to share, David, is with the audience, is that you discovered this really through your interest in being able to predict stock behavior.
That was, well, it was sort of the other way around. I was looking for a corroboration of the theory once I had come up with these durations of how long the cycles are inside of us as a nation. And I thought, well, what's a good way of looking for records that meter daily change and the mood and the activity of the nation? Well, what's better recorded than the market?
Yes, right.
So I began looking for patterns there, and indeed I found them.
It's a great place to find them. Now let's look at larger cycles, if you will. I mean, what we have right now is, well, why don't we start on the national level and then we'll expand outward from there.
Charlie.
Right now we have President Obama in office. Were you able, through your understanding of colorhythms, to, let's just wind the clock back a couple of years at this point, almost, to the time of the presidential election? Were you able to see, through your understanding of colorhythms and time cycles, who is going to get the nod as president?
Well, I've been fortunate enough to, you know, guess the president who would be elected during the primaries. I predicted Obama would win the presidency. Always during the primaries. I predicted that Obama would be president before he won his third primary. And that was because there was so much in what he was doing in his message and his campaign that was consistent to where the cycles are at the time.
And where were they at the time?
Well, in 2008, you know, it's interesting, I was talking about the different patterns of a cycle. And there is a time in a cycle during when it's high that you branch out. You can think of it as a tree spreading out its branches and growing new branches. And you can call that the summer of a cycle. And it's been very interesting because between 2008 and 2009, all three of the cycles were in that position in the summer of the time of fruition and expansion and variation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost unprecedented to have all three cycles in that position, you know, at the same time. So it was a bit of a heyday. So, and along with that, the emotional cycle was up. And he was talking about hope. And hope is certainly, you know, consistent with an emotional high.
Yeah.
As opposed to
change, hope and change, right?
Yes, hope and change. You know, variation is one of the aspects of the summer of a cycle. That's when you do, you know, you branch out from what was. You get out of the standards and the conformity. You're not setting precedents now. You're building on them in the summer. And we had one of the most, you know, elaborate summers in the cycle. So when he was talking about hope, that was an emotional high. And when he spoke about change, that was the summer of the cycle in which all three cycles had positioned themselves at that time. He was consistent with the position of the cycles in 2008.
In his message, more so than Hillary Clinton, for instance.
Well, Hillary Clinton had an advantage going into that election because I have documented consistently throughout our history how women are elected more into office during an emotional high. I want to get into the yin-yang of cycles very briefly to explain what I mean by that.
Sure.
Physical cycle is yin energy, and it is masculine. Emotional cycle is... Did I say yang? Physical is yang. Thank you, Mitch.
Right.
Emotional is yin, and that's feminine energy. Now, intellectual energy is neither masculine or feminine. Intelligence is not masculine or feminine.
Uh-huh.
It is neither, and it is both. Now,
uh-huh.
Hillary Clinton had her eyes on the 2008 presidency for a long time, and her timing was perfect for that. So she had a great advantage going in. But my interpretation of her message was that she was listing what she was running against. That works when these cycles are low because
mm-hmm.
people will move away from a negative when the cycle is low.
Mm-hmm.
But they will move towards a positive when the cycle is high. And that was Obama's message, so he had the greater advantage.
I see. It's interesting because if you predicted that early on, and it is early from that we can see in retrospect because, as you said, he was not going in with an advantage at all, not to start with. If you look at the, you know, the political chessboard, he was not the favorite. The favorite. But he did emerge as the winner, obviously. And so that you were able to track it that early on is just testament to something of the system that you've developed. So,
I had said 10 years ago that in the 2008 election, what's going to happen is that the Democrats were going to bring forth a dark horse candidate. And the dark horse candidate is an expression meaning someone who is not known. You know, so it's like having Harrison Ford in the first Star Wars film. They were actually looking for actors that were not known because, you know, they knew where the cycles were and they knew when it was time for change. And that was part, so that was, he embodied the element of change by not being an insider.
Yes, interesting. Was Universal Pictures consulting with you?
I love watching the movies. I love to watch the trailers that come out on the television commercials, and I make little predictions. And I got to tell you, I get most of them right. However, I'm laughing because I remember there was one, some movie came out with a boat on it, and I said, oh, that's going to be a flop, and it was Titanic. Because it was all about the past. And I said, oh, nobody wants to see a historical film at this time. We're not looking back. So, but, you know, I'm one of those people that went and bought a ticket and saw it more than once. Thank you very much. And I found this beautiful love story during the emotional high, and wow, what a film. But most of the time I actually do call them just by, you know, comparing them against the moving template of where we are and our rhythmic influence.
Exactly. So from that point of view, what do you see? Right now, we are a world besieged by conflict. There is the longest standing war in U.S. history being battled still in Afghanistan, even though the majority of Americans are against it, just as happened in Vietnam, but there is no immediate real plan to get out. It's flip-flopping, as you could say. You know, we have a war against drugs, which has also it is longer than the war in Afghanistan, and it's as we've lost that one as well. Mexico is about to legalize drugs, and probably for good reason. We have incredible flooding in Pakistan, obviously. We had the Haitian earthquake. We have had earthquakes in Chile and in other parts of the world. China is completely besieged with intense flooding and other natural geological disasters. On it goes. You know that flash flooding in Arkansas, Oklahoma. What do you see on a geological level? I think that's a very unearthing subject, just settling, that you could say is happening in the upcoming future?
Since there is a pattern that repeats, whether you're looking at the biorhythms of a person or the internal rhythms within a nation or the slower moving trends of history, time and again we can see correlations of exact or similar periods in the celestial bodies and most particularly on Earth. Mm-hmm. Graham Hancock wrote a book, Fingerprints of the Gods, in which he was looking at the geological evidence of great disasters that happened around the world, and he said he believes that they happen periodically. He says there is a great cycle in Earth upheavals and changes. And he based that not on his academic interest in cycles, he based that on looking at the evidence. Examples of great floods, there's Lake Titicaca in Argentina, where you can see the old lake bed, which is carved in stone, but half of the old...
In Peru?
Oh, excuse me, thank you. Peru, and you can look at the old lake bed lining in the rock, where it used to be, but half of that is up above the water line, and the other half of that is down below the current water line, which means that there was a shift and a tilt. So what happened there? Now, and he lists, he actually traveled to the different sites around the world to look at these, and he said, well, it appears that what we can find is that they're about 13,000 years apart. So he looked at, for correlation again, he looked at, well, what pattern do we have going on with the Earth with that? And he said the precession of the equinoxes, which is some 26,000 years long. He is saying that twice during that 26,000-year period, you're going to have a period of upheaval. And indeed, that is the basic pattern of a cycle, whether it is a biorhythm in your body or colorhythm of the nation, that when the cycle crosses up out of the low into the high half, it has to cross the midpoint. And
the
that is a
cycle?
Physical, emotional, and intellectual, creating a brief crisis.
All three have to pass up. Beyond
everyone has to pass up, and it creates a shakeup, and it's a disturbance when you cross from low to high and when you cross back down from high into low. It's a brief transitional crisis where you can step on a banana peel.
I see. Okay. So from that point of view, based on Hancock's work and your own, what do you foresee? I mean, I would like to hear what you foresee economically, politically, socially, and geologically.
I'm going to scale back down from the 26,000 year cycle and look at what I call megarhythms, which are three cycles lasting hundreds of years long in the world. There's a 336 year physical cycle, a 432 year emotional cycle, and a 528 year intellectual cycle. Where they are right now is a plausible explanation for the shifts of energy and the change in power that we see going in the world today.
Mm-hmm.
Case in point, the emergence of China. I know that the research director of the Foundation for the Study of Cycles has spoken in interviews about the belief that there is a 500-year pattern between shifts of power between East and West.
Are you referring to Richard Mogie?
Richard Mogie, the research director for the Foundation for the Study of Cycles.
Of course, through your introduction, we had on the show a couple of years ago as well.
Yes, indeed. And what I've been saying is, in the context of the color rhythms, that it's a 528-year cycle, the intellectual cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And the sleeping dragon of China, so it has been dubbed, was the sleeping dragon while the intellectual cycle of the world was low.
Mm-hmm.
But now, at this very time, it's crossing up into the high half, and it is emerging as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And the emotional cycle is in the same position. It's simultaneously, right now, crossing up into the high half, and you're going to see more emergence from India. India will continue to rise, I believe, with the rising world emotional cycle. China and India, as everyone already knows, are going to be dominant powers for the next 200 years. I say that presumptuously, everyone knows, but it's a common belief.
No, no one knows that they will be the dominant powers for 200 years. I wouldn't say people know that at all. China is obviously on the rise. It just passed Japan as the second leading economic power in the world. You know, that happened about 3 weeks ago. But to say that it will sustain that for 200 years, you're one of the few people who would make that assertion.
I will stand by that because of the rising intellectual cycle. And, you know, you can look at, you talk about the geophysical.
Well, I'm not challenging that. I'm just saying that's not common knowledge. And that's why we're having you on the show. Perhaps make it common knowledge.
I would like to share that belief that theoretically they will continue to rise with the intellectual cycle.
Okay,
and
what happens to the United States?
The United States is in some ways going to continue to decline. What brought the United States as a world leader was the physical cycle, which was high during the 19th and 20th centuries. And that is what gave us the Industrial Revolution and the Machine Age. The United States emerged as a world leader and sustained that position for quite a while during the Machine Age, during the physical high that now has become a physical low. And with that, the United States is going to not have as much of its individuality, but is going to become more of a cooperative team player. Because when the physical cycle in the world becomes low, fences come down. We become less proprietary. We become less territorial. And we become less warlike.
Mm-hmm.
The irony is this.
There's no more money.
Well, yes, we are no longer going to be a great wealth. We are in debt to China. And, you know, China is winning as much its power through very intelligent economics as it is from the point of a gun. So, you know, it's scissors, paper, rock. Sometimes the smart will lead, sometimes the faithful will lead, and sometimes the smart will lead.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's all where we are in the cycles.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. So the United States isn't going down to bottom, but it's going to become more of a, let's say, a pure player rather than a dominant figure.
Yes, it's going to be less, you know, truth, justice, and the American way, regardless of what country you're in. It's going to be that we are going to, well, it's like the book, The World is Flat. And so we're going to be more of a team player. But as aspects of our former leadership or declining leadership are declining with the physical cycle, are declining with the downturn of the machine age, there is another element in the United States, and that is great, great spirit. And as the emotional cycle rises throughout, to bring us a new romantic era that will coincide with the new age of reason of the intellectual rise. The United States will benefit from that because I believe there is an emotionally based element that is born into our country, and we are going to become a little bit more moral in our decisions, and we're going to become a little bit more spiritually based and religious based.
Can you quantify that a bit more moral? What does that look like on a scale of 1 to 100?
Well, this
make
the country
it a little
that
bit
I,
more than a little, please.
Well, this the United States, my favorite country, has a history that was that had some points of might makes right, and so it was not necessarily a decision to go in and to other countries and say we have raw materials that we want from here. Or to go into the Dakotas and say, well, we don't have to honor treaties with the Native Americans. If there's gold there, just get the gold. And, you know, and there's a lot we could talk about going into different places for oil and everything like that. And it's, I don't want to make a dissertation, or judgment necessarily as much as analysis. What's going to happen now is people in general are going to want leaders who are going to say, well, let's not just look at what we can do. Let's look at what we should do and think longer term. You know, if we go in and we, you know, eradicate a culture in order to get, you know, destroy the land and take raw materials so that we can build things that have poisonous results, is this good for the children? And because of who we are as a nation, we can correct these things, and we're doing that. And we are a very self-reforming nation. We're still self-reforming from slavery. We're self-reforming from industrial pollutants and so forth. And we're going to continue to do that at an accelerated pace as the physical cycle declines and it's less might makes right, and the emotional cycle rises, which leads to greater morality. So I have great faith in the United States.
From the point of view of the much-discussed 2012 date given to us by the Mayans, who Carl Kallman, who I introduced you to some years ago, Mayan scholar from Sweden and the United States, refers to instead as October 28, 2011, in each of these cases, what, from the point of view of colorisms, Dave, do you see? Do you see anything? I don't even want to use the word cataclysmic unless it's referring to, let's say, a spiritual, a psycho-emotional cataclysm or transformation. What is it that you see?
Well, it may be. Let's take a look at what's ending in 2012 or 2011, 1 year difference either way. It's the end of what they call the Mayan long count. That is a cycle that is counted by the ancient Mayan civilization, and it lasts more than 5,125 years between changes. The last time that the Mayan calendar ended was back in 3114 BC, and as the world is still here. So there are different schools of thought, so I am told by some scholars who have spent time down there, and I had the great privilege of meeting Mr. Kallman through you, Dr. Kallman, through you. And some say, yes, this will be associated with physical calamities in the world. And then they point to the Hopi prophecies, which some of the interpretations are that we're going to have floods and earthquakes and lightning. Others are divided and say, yes, it's going to be a transition, but it's more of a moral and consciousness transition. So we're very soon going to find out which of those two schools of thought are right.
Uh-huh. And what, from the point of view of colorisms, do you foresee?
What's very interesting is right now we have a somewhat rare event. There are two cycles crossing over the midpoint of crisis that we talked about at the same time. And, you know, you're only going to have that happen a couple of times in a millennium. And what's happening is simultaneously the emotional cycle of 432 years, the intellectual cycle of 528 years are coming up out of the low and crossing through that dangerous middle section and giving us a bad day, a doubly bad day. That period of time for transition for this, I believe, is lasting 12 years, and it began in the year 2000.
In the year 2000.
So from 2000 to 2012, we're going to continue to have a bad day. And when you look at global economic collapses, the collapse of Iceland government because of the global things, and our housing collapse in 2008, long wars that we've had and so forth. And we all know what's happening in our lifetime now.
Exactly. And then, based on what you're saying, we'll continue to be really very troubling until the end of 2012, but then it sounds like there's a glimmer of light. Is that so?
Yeah. Yes, and I certainly believe that the glimmer of light that comes from 2012 on is that there is going to be far less cruelty in the next two centuries than we have seen in the past two.
Mm-hmm.
Because physical low, emotional high, less force, more compassion.
Yes.
And with the intellectual cycle being high, the power shifts are going to be going towards ideas, not necessarily power for its own sake.
I see. And that, I wonder if that, and you've probably correlated it to that old idea of an age of peace. After, interesting, the Kali Yuga is the age of peace. You know, is there some correlation to that?
Well, the Kali Yuga, lasting thousands of years long, we're supposed to be in that now, and that's supposed to be the darkest quarter of this great cycle, and it's the same cycle again. It's the four stages, you know, and where you go through the four quarters of development. But then, after you rise up out of the darkness, there will be a world calamity, and we go into Sattva Yuga, we go into a greater enlightened time, and a much more peaceful time. But and this is all relative. Peaceful on Earth is a relative term.
Well put. Oh, my word. Yeah, isn't that true? So it's very interesting. I mean, the power of the calorhythm cycles as you've developed them, it's really a piercing view into humanity, and the way we handle each other, ourselves, and the earth around us, the world around us. And I really appreciate the body of work that you've developed, and I only wish that we had more time, Dave, no pun intended there, that to further develop the potentials, understanding of what it is that is before us as a world, because God knows you are giving us a point of leverage that could be extremely useful in helping us negotiate the times to come.
Yeah, hopefully so. And merely understanding what is happening is very helpful, and it can help us to make our decisions in a way that will benefit ourselves and others and our nation, our world,
exactly,
a little better.
My recommendation to you is also that I wish that you could be truly kind of a national consultant, although at the same time I wish that you could possibly do, or do you, individual consultations with people for them to get a better picture of the time cycles in their own personal lives.
Well, I do, and I referenced one with the bookstore where I was working. I put together what are called Kala charts, where we'll look at what is the nature of a business. Is it physically based? Is it emotionally based or intellectually based? Then look at it in the context of what region of a country or what region of the world is that it's in. What are the rhythms of that nation at the time? And then take a look at where it is coming from, where it is, and where it's going, so that you can plot a course. Well, an example, if you're going to sail from New York to London, you're not going to want to steam across the ocean in a straight line. If you go with the ocean currents and navigate with the trade winds, you'll get there faster, easier, less fuel.
Exactly. Dave, please give the audience your website or phone number for people to get in touch with you.
Yes, you can find this and more things on the web at kalarhythms.com. That's kalarhythms.com. And one more thing I'd like to mention. If you'd like to make a comment, if this is thought-provoking, there's a new Cycles forum that has been opened up by the Cycles Research Institute, headed by Ray Tomes. And I invite you to go there as well, to go to the CyclesResearchInstitute.org. You'll find a blog. You'll find a new Cycles forum. Leave a comment. Read some posts, and we can communicate.
That's wonderful. Dave, thank you so much, my friend. It's brilliant work. I always appreciate having you on the show, and we will have you back on again.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Be well now. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Please visit us at www.abetterworld.net. Sign up for our newsletter if you're not on it already. And always share your comments with us. We love hearing from you at abetterworldinfo@yahoo.com. We love hearing. It's always so useful for us. So please stay tuned for our shows next week, Monday and Wednesday. Actually, I will be out of town, out in Jaffrey, British Columbia, at the Ideal Community, and then after that in Vancouver, so I won't be around, but we'll be airing some shows that have been said to be favorites of our audience. And thanks so much for joining us. This is Mitchell J. Rabin for A Better World on Progressive Radio Network, and I look forward to speaking with you when I return. And the shows will be aired next Monday and Wednesday at the same time, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Bye-bye now.